There's so much for the political aspect of our collective existence, or Buddhism's teachings about that political aspect. Now, the other aspect, of course, is the economic aspect of our collective existence. And so far as that aspect is concerned, Buddhism teaches right livelihood. So in other words, we may say that Buddhism teaches the complete transformation in the light of that initial, that original perfect vision of our whole collective, no less than our whole individual life. In other words, Buddhism stands for the creation of an ideal society as well as the creation of an ideal individual. After all, we are all parts of society, all members one of another, and it's very difficult for us to change ourselves while society remains unchanged. The Indians have a proverb that you can't work in the kitchen without getting a bit of soot on you. The conditions in which that proverb originated didn't envisage electricity or gas or anything of that sort. In India, cooking is still a very messy affair with charcoal and things like that. So you can't live and work in the kitchen without getting a bit of soot on you. And in the same way, you cannot live and work in a corrupt, basically unethical society without to some extent being besmirched by that. So even in the interest of one's own individual moral and spiritual life, one has to make or try to make some effort to transform the society in the midst of which one lives. It's all very well to talk about the lotus blooming in the midst of the mire, but it's very difficult to be a lotus when the mire is particularly nasty or particularly all-pervasive. One has to make some effort to transform the society and the world in the midst of which one lives. Otherwise, it's very difficult indeed to transform oneself. Now, at this point, a sort of question arises. We've seen that our collective existence has three principal aspects. There's a social aspect, there's a political aspect, there's an economic aspect. But the fifth step, or the fifth stage of the Noble Eightfold Path, that is to say the perfect livelihood, this represents only one of these three aspects, that is to say the economic. So why is this? Assuming that the fifth step of the Noble Eightfold Path does deal with our collective existence, why does it deal only with one aspect of that collective existence? Why only with the economic? Not with the political, not with the social. Why are these other two aspects of our political, of our collective existence not included in the path? Perfect livelihood, well, that's all right, but why not perfect citizenship, or why not perfect administration? If the path is also concerned with our collective existence, why only right livelihood? Well, the explanation may be found, or partly found, in the conditions obtaining in India at the time of the Buddha. On the social side, we may say that life was comparatively simple, comparatively unorganized, luckily, and that apart from the caste system, there wasn't very much in the social scene in the Buddha's day in India which needed revision or correction. And so far as the political aspect is concerned, we may recollect that the Buddha taught and that Buddhism was propagated mainly in areas where monarchy was the only existing form of government, which meant that ordinary people had little, if any, share in the government or in political life and activity. So in those days, there was not much point in asking people in general to practice perfect government or perfect administration or even perfect citizenship when they had very little say and very little share in these matters anyhow. But however that may have been, undoubtedly everybody had to work. They may not have had a vote, they may not have had any say in the administration, they may not have known always what the king was up to, but at least they all, or practically all, had to work. They all had to earn a living. So the question of right livelihood or perfect livelihood was one which concerned everybody, even in the Buddha's day. And for this reason, no doubt, perfect livelihood was included in the Noble Eightfold Path and made a part of it. We might even sort of hazard a speculation here. We might even suggest that the Buddha himself felt that the economic aspect of our collective existence was even more basic than either the social or the political, and therefore, for this reason also, he included right livelihood, representing the economic aspect of our collective existence, in the Noble Eightfold Path. We do know quite definitely from the Buddhist scriptures and other sources that in the days of the Buddha, during the Buddha's lifetime, trade and business, finance, were all developing rapidly. And the Buddha himself could not have been unaware of this. We know that quite a number of the Buddha's own closest lay disciples were what we would call merchant bankers, who had all sorts of business connections and who carried on business and various financial operations on an international scale, even into Babylon and Sumeria and so on. So perhaps also for this reason the Buddha included perfect livelihood in his scheme of the Noble Eightfold Path.